This is Tell Me Straight. I'm Yasmin and I'm here with Will. Hi, Will.
Hello.
And today we went on a little adventure.
We went
to the University of Sydney, a long trip down the street, basically, to my alma mater to track down.
My name's Geraint Lewis and I'm a professor of astrophysics at the University of Sydney.
And we were there to talk all things gravitational waves because
it was a wonderful discovery.
You might have seen, it's in the news, the people behind it, or three of them, have won a Nobel Prize. Small thing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, no big deal.
No big deal. But anyway, we thought, what are gravitational waves? What is the Nobel Prize? And how is that awarded? That was a really interesting
sort of discussion
as well. And also, we talk a lot about very perfect mirrors.
Yes, the most perfect mirrors in the world. It was a really interesting chat. We sat in his office, so you might be able to hear a bit of some cars and some sound from outside. We were surrounded by maths equations that were very old, apparently, 100-year-old maths equations
old,
on the wall.
Done.
It was a pretty interesting place. He's like, oh, yeah, don't worry about that. Oh, and across the road is one of the guys who worked on the gravitational waves theory. It's just like, all right, this is a pretty impressive building.
Yeah, find some very impressive people wandering around that building.
I used to work there, so.
Oh, well, of course. Anyway, so we started by asking about the Nobel Prize itself.
It's an exciting time, but it's not unexpected. I mean, these guys were the lead runners for the prize this year for the discovery of gravitational waves. So, you know, it's been a very quick Nobel Prize. The discovery was last year. The award was made this year. And so often it can be 20 years between discovery and award, but this is such a big event that they were effectively a shoo-in, I think.
So anyone else in the running was like, don't even bother this year, guys. These gravitational waves, guys, they've got it in the bag.
Well, possibly, but we won't find out for 50 years, right? Because the Nobel discussions are kept hidden for half a century.
Why is that?
To stop people arguing about who should have gotten the Nobel Prize, I think, right? So yeah, so there's this, like, 50 years afterwards, we find out who was up for the Nobel Prize, etc.
And only three people were given the gong in the end, as it always is. It's never like large groups of people, but it seems one of these weird things where like thousands and thousands of people really were involved in the science of gravitational waves and the discovery, but only three guys get it in the end.
Yes. So you have to remember the Nobel Prize was set up, you know, 1900-ish. Science was a very different time then. It was often individuals, not really lone individuals, people working with other people, but, you know, it was individuals that made the breakthrough. But over the last half a century, we've moved into big science. And big science, rarely do you get that notion of a lone genius anymore. It's a big collaborative effort. But the rules of the Nobel Prize still stand, that it's awarded to a maximum of three people, and it's not awarded posthumously. So it can only be awarded to three living people. So while this year, yes, the three people got the prize, the team behind them numbers in the thousands.
Could there be like a fourth guy out there who's like, are you kidding me? Like, I was integral to this. I should have been one of the top three.
I think in this case, it was reasonably clear who the lead three were. And in fact, up until recently, there was the lead four. One of them died in the last year, so left them with the three, which matches what is required. Science is rarely done in isolation. It's collaboration. And this is one of the things that does, I think, annoy people about the Nobel Prize, is that you see three people, but really you don't see the cast of thousands behind.
Yeah, and I think even the Nobel Prize was awarded not in thirds. It was like one guy got half and the other two got...
a quarter. Yeah, that sometimes happens. Exactly the reasons for that.
We'll find out in 50 years.
We'll find out in 50 years, so... Yeah.
So what was the discovery? It was about gravitational waves, and it was about the LIGO detector, which we'll talk about in a minute, which is just this fascinating piece of equipment and scientific machinery. But can you explain gravitational waves to us in 25 words or less?
And we're 25? Counting. Gosh, that's a
all right,
hell of a limit.
You can go on a little bit.
Even Twitter now gives you 280, right? So, okay. Oh, that's characters, I should say, isn't it? Okay. I'll try and keep the number of words to a minimum, but Einstein revolutionized our view of gravity. Instead of gravity being a force, it talks about the curvature of space and time. And it turns out that this space and time has a rubbery sort of consistency to it. So if you set up a ripple, that ripple can travel through space and time. And that's what we call a gravitational wave. Predicted 100 years ago, discovered 2016. So, you know, it was a culmination of 100 years of work to get to this point.
And it was Einstein that predicted it 100 years ago?
Yes, it came from Einstein's original work with regards to looking at, again, the springiness of space-time. You know, if you put a dent in it, does it respond like water would or a rubber sheet would? And you find, yes, you find you can get ripples to travel across the universe.
What hasn't Einstein predicted?
Well, there's a few things, but yeah, yes. No, he did okay for himself.
Yeah.
Classic Einstein, yeah. Right again.
Yeah.
So is it like when you throw a rock into the middle of a flat lake, and you see the ripples come out? Is that a way of conceptualizing space-time? Like, I can't quite ever get my head around what space-time is.
Of course, it's slightly more complicated than the surface of water, but it's a good analogy that you put a disturbance into the water, you drop in a stone, or in our universe, two black holes merge together. That violent event where very strong gravitational fields are interacting together can set up these ripples, and then these ripples travel away from the event and travel off into the universe. So we expect there to be these sort of gravitational waves basically trundling through the universe continuously, because we know we must have lots of violent events going on. The big problem is that they're very, very weak. Gravity is the weakest of forces, and so even though Einstein predicted them, the thought of actually detecting them was like well beyond any technology of his day.
So he was predicting that, say, a big version of this is two black holes slam together and create these gravitational waves. If I was standing next to the black holes or near enough, could I, like, what would that feel like to have a gravitational wave hit you? Does that even make sense?
No. It absolutely does make sense. It would probably not be pleasant. Okay. So what you would experience as a gravitational wave goes through you if you were very close to these merging events, right? They're tidal forces. So what they do is they stretch and compress. So what would happen is, as a wave comes through, you might be stretched from head to feet and compressed on the sides, but then it's a wave, right? Like a water wave comes through. That compression then changes axis. So you then get stretched across the middle and compressed from head to toe. And as depending on the wavelength of the wave, this compression goes on. And those tidal forces, the internal stresses in your body are battling those forces and are holding you together. So, you know, if the gravitational wave is strong enough, if you're that close to that kind of event, then yes, it would not be good for you.
You would explode,
yeah,
probably.
It would be unpleasant. There's a notion known as spaghettification, which is when you fall into a black hole, that the tidal forces there, they pull on your feet stronger than your head, so you get stretched and stretched and stretched until you snap. This would be a similar kind of thing, but it would be the waves coming through would be changing the direction of your stretching and squeezing.
Like a funhouse mirror. You sort of go up and then out.
That's right, but without the fun.
No. Okay.
So the event you were talking about, which is the discovery that LIGO picked up, was two black holes eventually colliding with the force of like 60...
Yeah, so the picture is that, so it's kind of funny because gravitational waves play a role in all of this. You have two black holes, and these black holes have masses of around 30 times the mass of the sun.
And the size of them I read was like they're about 200 kilometers wide.
Yes.
So it's the like 30 suns packed into a space.
Actually, the mass itself is packed into an infinitesimally small point called singularity at the center of that region. So there's a thing called the event horizon, which is the horizon. If you cross that, you ain't coming back. Gravity's got you, and you're going to end up at the center of the black hole. So that's that size that we have to describe this, the size of a black hole. So for the sun, it's around 3 kilometers, and then you can just scale it up for bigger black holes. So these two black holes, they orbit each other. Now, this orbit, because they're very close and they've got strong gravitational fields, is actually setting up ripples in space-time. So the fact that they're orbiting gives you ripples in space-time. Those ripples carry away energy. So that means that the orbits of the black holes are decaying. They're getting closer and closer together. And so it's actually a catastrophic feedback. The closer they get, the bigger the waves they produce, and they lose more energy, and the closer they get again, until eventually they collide. And you get to a point where the collision takes place, space-time basically goes up and down like crazy, and then everything settles down again. And it was that last few moments before the actual coalescence where the waves got big enough that we were able to detect them. So we didn't see this long train of waves where the energy was steadily being lost. It was the violent sort of shaking right at the end as they merged is what LIGO saw.
Okay, so the three guys that got the Nobel Prize, they were awarded that for inventing this LIGO detector, or for inventing it and then detecting this one specific big collision event and being able to actually, you know, detect those gravitational waves and prove Einstein's theory.
Yeah. So it's a long story. Over time, I should say, rather, I'm going to tell you a long story. So Kip Thorne is the theorist involved here, and he might be known to people as being the person who was the sort of scientific advisor on Interstellar. So he advised them how black holes should look, etc.
The movie.
Yeah, the movie, I should say, yes. So he had the idea that gravitational waves were more than just an interesting curiosity that we can possibly sense remotely. We can actually detect them directly on Earth. And he had the idea that you could do this with this detector, which became LIGO. So he had the theoretical ideas. And then the others in the team came along and established the actual program. And then it was the bit, it was getting the money, building the device, running the device. And for a long time, I mean, the devices have been in place for a long time. It's been the usual scientific problem of beating down the background noise, because there are many things that can shake a detector. You're looking for possibly the most feeblest of them all. You've got to get rid of all the other shaking that's going on. So it was the theoretical idea plus then the implementation, which is the result of the big project.
So the numbers when you read about this detector are just like they're either huge or tiny. There's no like in between.
That's right.
And so like you've got, so how do they work? You've got basically like a crossed, and then they've got these long vacuum tubes of 4 kilometers each, precisely 4 kilometers.
Well, they know the distances exceedingly well.
They've done their measurements.
Let's go through this. They have two tubes at 90 degrees to each other, right angles to each other, 4 kilometers long. Okay. And at either end, they have mirrors, and they're not just normal like bathroom mirrors. These are very, very specific mirrors with very specific properties, which means that they can be exceedingly stable, exceedingly stable.
Would you say the best mirrors ever made?
I'm sure they would say the best mirrors ever made.
Does it look like a regular mirror to a normal person?
I mean, its job is to reflect a laser beam. So it's a mirror. That's what it does. It's a mirror. But it's in a whole set of apparatus that holds it exceedingly steady with regards to whatever anything else is going. It doesn't really move. They then fire laser light, right? So the laser light bounces up and down these tubes back and forth. They bounce many times. They bring the laser light together, and they do this thing called interference. They mix the light together. And from that mixing, they can exceedingly accurately measure the length of those tubes to a fraction of the wavelength of the light. Now, when a gravitational wave comes through, just the same way as we said that if you were in the vicinity of an emerging black hole, you would be compressed and stretched, this is what happens to the arms of LIGO. One arm gets stretched and so gets slightly longer. The other arm gets compressed and gets slightly shorter. And that then is seen when the light is mixed. You get this very slight shift in the interference because the arms are slightly different length. And then as the wave travels through again, then the one that was compressed becomes longer. The one that was longer becomes compressed. So you can actually see the motion of the wave. The numbers, which are pretty freaky, is how accurately can they do this? And it's, you know, the thousandth the width of a proton is the accuracy to which they can measure the shift in the change in the length of these paths that the laser light bounces along. So it's a really, really tiny amount. And this is what they'd known for years. If you're going to detect any gravitational waves, you've got to get down to this limit. Otherwise, any background noise is going to kill you. And when, as soon as they got down there, right, everybody said, all right, this year, LIGO's going to see something. They turn it on, boom, first thing through.
So they said, as soon as we turn this machine on, we know we're going to detect these gravitational waves. We know, that's when they knew what they were going to prove.
Well, I mean, what you would say is, there's caveats, right? If there are big black holes merging in the universe, when we turn this machine on, we should see them. If we don't see merging black holes in the universe, we've got to scratch our heads over black holes, because they know that the sensitivity is right. So if the universe acts like we think it acts, then we should see signals from black holes.
So that must have been like an incredible moment for these people, just that moment of turning the thing on.
Well, LIGO, big science has to be very careful, right? You don't want to, you know, go out there and make too many claims, right? So LIGO had this entire apparatus. So for years, they've played a game, right, where they inject false signals into the data. So there's a select group that say, right, we're going to put in a signal now. Let's see if people can detect that. And then so people see something, everyone gets very excited. They go, is it real? Is it real? Yes, the signature's right, etc. They get to the point of saying, right, we've already written the paper. We're going to submit it to the most important journal. They open an envelope and just went, false alarm.
Because so, the story is, isn't it, that the day it came through, it was night, and everyone in America where the two detectors are. We should also say there are two of these.
Yes.
So There's one in
Louisiana, isn't there?
Yeah, one in the south, one in the north.
One in Louisiana, one in Washington.
About 3,000 kilometres apart.
Yes.
And that's because you want to be able to remove the background noise, like say a truck or a plane flying over.
That's right. If a gravitational wave comes through, right, it's going to be a big thing and you should see it in both detectors, right? If you see something in one and not the other, then you sort of go, well, maybe that was a truck that looks a bit like a gravitational wave. But if you see the same signature in both, then you know you're onto something.
Because the signal had been traveling from the event that we're talking about for like 1.2 billion years.
Yes.
So
right.
3,000 kilometres is probably not a big ask for it. If it's going to hit one, it's going to hit the other.
Yeah.
And so the nighttime was in America and then it got sent to, what, Germany, was it?
Yes.
The guy in Germany, and it popped up a detection and he thought maybe it's a fake.
No, actually. So this is where the story gets kind of interesting. They only inject fakes into science runs. So they at designated times, they say, right, the instrument is now on for science taking. They don't inject fakes into engineering time, which is when they run in the machine and just checking things are working. The first event was seen in engineering time. So when that event popped up on his screen, he just knew instantaneously that that was it. Now, and the issue about Germany, of course, is again, very important. The Nobel Prize winners were all American, right? But the LIGO collaboration is international. And there are people involved, even in the peripheries of LIGO, in every country in the world. In fact, on the opposite side of this corridor, I know there's somebody involved in aspects of LIGO work. So it is a very multinational. And this is what big science is these days. Very rarely do you find a country rich enough to do big projects on their own.
And that's almost the next step for gravitational waves. It's not like, oh, I've done it, put it in the drawer.
We've put it in the book.
Einstein's right again. Yeah. It's going to continue. They're going to build more of these detectors on Earth,
yes,
which will give better resolution as to where in the sky the event's
right.
coming from, so we can zero in. And they're also going to build a space one.
Yes. So there's a couple of things. Well, so firstly, going back, yep, exactly. It's, you know, Galileo didn't look at Jupiter and just go, right, that's that done, and put the telescope down, right? You know, you've got a new window onto the universe. And astronomers, once you have a new window, you want to use it because it tells you something different about the universe. We don't see black holes merging in optical light. So, you know, you have a window onto black holes merging. So, yes, the idea is to build more. That helps you pinpoint where they are in the sky, because then you can swing your other telescopes, your radio telescopes, your optical telescopes to that point. Because it could be neutron stars merging, which do give you a burst of radiation when they merge. So the more of these events you can actually follow up, the more it tells you about sort of the extreme processes in the universe. The other thing is the wavelength, right? So these, they're waves, they come with a wavelength, and you know, the detectors in LIGO are sensitive to a certain range of wavelengths. But you want to build detectors with sensitive to different ranges. So you start to build them with longer arms, and the place that you can do that is in space. So instead of having tubes of vacuums, you have satellites that are now bouncing laser beams between themselves, and they're watching again for the tiny disturbances in their position as a gravitational wave comes through, and that will again probe slightly different wavelength and will help pinpoint things on the sky. So yeah, it's very, very exciting actually that, this is given the impetus to a lot of countries to come on board and say, right, we're going to get our gravitational wave detectors up and running. This is what we had last week, was that the last gravitational wave that was detected in the two LIGO detectors and the Virgo detector in Europe. So Europe is now in the game, right?
And that was the first time that one had detected. Yeah,
yeah. And so seen in all three. Its signal was not quite as good, but it had the same pattern. What they're going to do now is, of course, now work on beating down the noise. And, of course, China and India, et cetera, are all talking about building, and Japan, building gravitational wave detectors.
And now we found four? Was that the fourth one?
I think it was. Again, so one of the things is that it's a bit of a rumor game, because everyone's kind of excited by this. So you hear rumors about what's been detected, but nothing official comes out until they write stamps on the paper. This is the official announcement. So yeah, we're always hearing rumors about what's going on, and I should probably not mention any more about that. But
yes. Another rumor.
So, it's like goss.
Yes.
Yeah. It's physicist goss. Have you got a Slack channel or something?
All the private info.
Actually, no. I mean, most aren't even that good at keeping secret. I mean, if you just watch a few people on Twitter, you'll see a few things flying past. So,
you might not understand them, though. Yeah. That's the problem.
I think there are interesting times ahead.
Thank you very much for explaining everything about gravitational waves and an amazing detector that does it.
Yep, absolutely. It was a wonderful discovery.
This is Tommy Strait. I'm Will Ockenden. That's Yasmin Parry. And we had a question in our inbox, which is tellmestraight@abc.net.au, if you have a question, that said, what is the singularity? And I don't think we quite answered it, but we did talk a little bit about the singularity there. So I'm going to count that as half answered, quarter answered.
We got
discussed.
Yeah,
put it in the column.
It was mentioned.
It was mentioned.
Thank you to John O'Hurt, who emailed in with that question. If you have a question, please send it our way because we love to
answer them.
Answer them.
Like I finish your question. No, your statements. No, your, damn it.
You finish my sentences?
Sandwiches.
We hang my sandwiches.
That's all for today. We'll see you soon.
Bye.